Good morning, this is Brian Trumbore with your Week in Review for Saturday, July 16th. What a week. The deleveraging of Europe continues, and we wait to see to what extent the United States takes the axe to spending, if at all, as part of a plan to avoid default. The ratings agencies are already voting, whether on Greece, now the lowest rated country in the world, Ireland, or the U.S. Starting with Greece, they got their $17 billion to tie them through August, but it's paramount a more extensive bailout, too, is approved between the European Union, European Central Bank, and the International Monetary Fund, and the EU is jerking around. Greek Prime Minister George Papandreou wrote a letter to Jean-Claude Juncker, chairman of the Eurogroup, complaining that European partners had acted too slowly to stem the crisis. Papandreou wrote, "Crunch time has arrived, and there is no room for indecisiveness and errors such as taking decisions that in the end prove too little too late. To convince the markets we are serious and making compromises that satisfy our internal political red lines that in the end substitute tactical politics for sound management of the crisis." For Greece, though, it's too late. The French rollover plan of a week ago was unacceptable and would have triggered default in the eyes of the ratings agencies. But in failing to come up with a plan B, the EU is impacting other members such as Italy. Or the EU should face facts and let Greece default, and for holders of its debt to accept 80% haircuts on their toilet paper as a way to restore solvency and get Greece down to a level of debt it can handle responsibly, because under current conditions it will never get out of its hole. Meanwhile, Portugal's situation could be manageable, but again, only if banks and insurers agree to share the pain. And there's Ireland, newly reduced to junk by Moody's, because in the agency's mind, it doesn't matter if it's doing all the right things, Ireland's still going to need massive further help down the road. This shouldn't be a surprise, even if the EU treated it as such, because when the interest rate on your two-year note goes from 12.8% to over 20% in 8 days, as it did in Ireland, it's pretty clear the country won't be able to get private financing anytime soon, which is the issue in Greece and Portugal. But as I said last time, Italy was going to be in the spotlight this week as its interest rates soared on contagion fears over how the third largest economy in the Eurozone would be able to service a public debt that is 120% of GDP. With Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi AWOL, it was left up to Economy Minister Giulio Tremonti to play fire chief, and he warned Parliament, quote, "If we don't have a balanced budget, then public debt, a monster from our past, would devour our future and the future of our children. The country is watching us." Tremonti also warned the likes of German Chancellor Angela Merkel. Quote, "There should be no illusions about who will be saved. Like on the Titanic, the first class passengers won't be able to save themselves. Either we move forward or we go down." Thanks to Tremonti's leadership, the Parliament passed a $70 billion four-year crash austerity plan, including a freeze on public sector salaries and a cut in regional subsidies, all in an attempt to calm the markets, to show potential bond buyers that Italy has its house in order. The initial response, though, is tepid, but Tremonti deserves credit for filling the leadership vacuum. In Spain, Prime Minister Zapatero's term ends in March or earlier. The budget deficit is running at a 9.2% rate when the target was to reduce it to 6% this year. Thus, further spending cuts are in the cards. The point of all the above is that none of the steps taken to date and those yet to come are conducive to growth, and that's what the region needs more than anything these days. But Europe, as is the case with the United States, made their bed and now it's got to sleep in it. It also doesn't help in terms of credibility that the EU conducted another level of stress test on its banks, 91 in all. And from a transparency standpoint, once again, they were lacking, because while EU officials said the parameters were more stringent than last year's test, which didn't pick up Ireland's banking crisis that would hit just months later, this one doesn't begin to take into account reality when it comes to the bank's exposure to the likes of Greece, Ireland, Portugal, Italy, and Spain. Five of the nine banks that failed were in Spain, incidentally, which is no surprise because, as I was telling you back in 2005, this nation's real estate bubble was as bad as any. But what made it worse was the massive corruption on the local level between town and city officials, the developers, and then the banks. There is no way anyone really knows what is on the books when it comes to Spain, even as the government the past year has tried to find out as part of a bank consolidation effort. Spain's financial institutions also remain woefully undercapitalized. So, add it all up, plus the situation in Washington, and it's no wonder the IMF warned in a note to G20 ministers that severe financial sector risks are looming because of the failure of politicians to come to grips with their humongous debts. So, speaking of Washington, should Congress fail to meet the August 2nd deadline to raise the debt ceiling, the IMF warns, a loss of fiscal credibility would be extremely damaging not only for the U.S. but for the rest of the world, given the role of the U.S. in world capital markets. Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke told a Senate committee that a U.S. default would be a self-inflicted wound with calamitous consequences. It would create a very severe financial shock that would have effects not only on the U.S. economy but the global economy, said Bernanke. So, this week the two sides squared off. Democratic leader Nancy Pelosi said, "We are not going to balance the budget on the backs of America's seniors. Social Security shouldn't be a piggy bank for giving tax cuts to the wealthiest people in this country." House Majority Leader Eric Cantor said, "No tax increases of any kind." Republican presidential contender Michelle Bachmann said she wouldn't vote to raise the debt ceiling under any circumstances. At which point, I could only shake my head in disgust. Oh, I know what the polls say, that over 60% of the American people don't want to raise the debt ceiling. But these are the same people who, when you tell them they might have some entitlement benefits, cut, scream bloody murder. And don't give me the hackneyed nonsense, never short the intelligence of the American people, as so many politicians and pundits love to throw out when they can't think of anything intelligent themselves. Americans have been making the wrong choices for decades, or we wouldn't be in this mess. From personal decisions with their own finances to whom they send to Washington. I've said it before and I have to say it again. These days, America is incredibly overrated. But I guess you can't put Barack Obama in that category, because if your approval ratings are now consistently under 50%, you're not really overrated, are you? Now, if he were to pull a rabbit out of his hat and reach a $4 trillion deficit reduction package that is credible, you could say he was underrated. But I digress. You see, on Friday, I watched our president at what has suddenly become his almost daily press conferences, and all I could think was, if ever there was a time in our history crying out for a viable third party, it's today. Whatever shred of credibility Barack Obama had left, it was scooped up by a dustbuster this week. I mean, for him to bring up the Simpson-Bowles Deficit Reduction Commission as he does now, after he threw their good work into the trash bin, should make everyone vomit. On Tuesday, Senate Republican Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said, "After years of discussions and months of negotiations, I have little question that as long as this president is in the Oval Office, a real solution is probably unattainable. The president has presented us with three choices, smoke and mirrors, tax hikes, or default. Republicans choose none of the above. I had hoped to do good, but I refuse to do harm. So Republicans will choose a path that actually reflects the will of the people, which is to do the responsible thing and ensure that the government doesn't default on its obligations." Says Mitch McConnell. And so we've arrived at Plan B, which is designed to allow the president to raise the debt ceiling in three increments unless Congress disapproves by a two-thirds majority, while Obama would be required to propose offsetting spending cuts, though Congress wouldn't necessarily have to enact them, all of which is designed to get us through the 2012 vote and make the election a referendum on the size of government. Stocks fell this week on the uncertainty generated by the debt ceiling debate, the euro crisis, and some so-so earnings, though Google bucked the trend in climbing from $528 a share to $597 between Thursday and Friday. On the week, the Dow Jones lost 1.4% to close at 12,479. The S&P 500 declined 2.1% and NASDAQ tumbled 2.4%. Citigroup reported results for its second quarter, and at first blush you saw $1.09 versus expectations of 97 cents. Hey, great. Then you found out the 43 cents was for reduced loan loss reserves, which is fine, but that the operating results were more like 66 cents, not 97, which kind of sucks, know what I'm saying? And so it is with financials. That's all I have for this week. I have far more at stocksandnews.com. Click on Week in Review. I'll be back with you next Saturday. Have a good one. Enjoy the British Open. Take care.